President Obama forms a task force to come up with ways to reduce gun violence in the wake of the tragic shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. What changes are needed? Congress does not vote on Plan B and has gone home for Christmas. Will the fiscal cliff be averted? And Wisconsin digs out from our blizzard on this first day of winter. We'll discuss these stories and more during our Week in Review this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, December 21st. It will not be the end of the world today, despite the Mayan calendar prediction, and we will explain that myth in our Week in Review quiz a little bit later on in the hour. If there is an issue in the news this week that you would like to bring up, we welcome your call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We are very happy to have with us Kevin Hermaning, political activist and former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy, and looking forward to bring some warmth to your day because, of course, you're under 20 inches of snow.
Oh, yeah, we really got dumped on. How about you in or the Mosinee area?
Well, you know, we got a lot. I made the trek from Wausau over to Manitowoc this morning, and except for Brown County, I don't think the highway plowers are out yet, but the rest of the roads were very, very good today.
Oh, well, that's good to know. The DOT was still saying, you know, take care and avoid travel if possible, but I'm glad you made it there safely.
Marathon, Shawano, and Manitowoc counties out on the main roads were doing a very good job.
And I think it's mainly South Central that's having a lot of blowing and drifting still right now. So, well, glad that you made your travel safely. Let me welcome our other guest. Christine Bremer-Moogley is also with us, attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. Good morning, Christine.
Hi, Joy. How are you? Hi, Kevin.
Good morning, Christine.
And you are in Wausau, Christine. How much snow did you get there?
Well, we got a lot. I'm looking out my window in my home in Rib Mountain, and, you know, this is one of the mornings we don't have to be in the studio, so I'm still in my jammies, Joy. I didn't have to drive to Manitowoc, so I don't know what the roads are like. But it looks like the road in front of our house has been plowed, so let's hope for good roads for all of us in the Wausau area.
Yeah, that was it was not the end of the world here in South Central Wisconsin, but as I am saying this morning, it was close to it. It was not very fun.
Well, we like the snow up north, though, Joe. We're looking forward to a really great white Christmas. So
right.
I want even more snow up here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to play in. Once we dig out, it'll be a lot of fun. You did do some traveling earlier this week, if I'm not mistaken, though, Christine. You came to Madison to cast your electoral vote. Didn't you officially elect President Obama this week?
Well, yes, I did, and it was just fantastic to join nine other electors, led by our chairman, Senator Risser, and we had just a joyous time, and the governor's was kind enough to lend us his conference room. By constitution, we must convene in the state capitol by noon on that day, and we did so, and for about 20 minutes we gathered and we all cast our vote, hands a little shaky, faces smiling. It was a historic event, and I was lucky enough to have both my daughters and my sisters present with me, and it was just fantastic.
Well, we're glad that you were able to perform that duty of democracy and be with us as well this hour. Well, let's talk about we have a lot to cover here today. We will a little bit later on talk about the tragedy in Newtown and the various policy changes that are being suggested in light of that tragedy. But I want to start with the news breaking from Washington last night that Plan B is no more. At least Plan B did not have the support in the House, and Speaker Boehner pulled it, and now Congress has is going to be headed home for the holidays without this plan that possibly could avert the fiscal cliff. This plan, if I'm not mistaken, just of increased taxes on millionaires, on the nation's wealthiest, and did not go down to the $400,000 salary mark that President Obama is suggesting for a tax hike. Kevin, your reaction to Plan B not working?
Well, I think that very few conservatives are surprised that there was a difficulty in getting enough votes in the Republican-led House. There was a plan to replace the automatic spending cuts set to hit next month that narrowly passed last evening. It was really close, 215 to 209. But I think that a lot of the conservative House members looked at what was going on across the Capitol, meaning over in the Senate as well as the White House, and really did not believe two things. Number one, that the Senate and the President would be supportive of only tax increases on only millionaires, that he did want to bring it down, and he voiced the fact over the last couple of days that he was unwilling to settle on that kind of a deal, that he would veto it. Senator Reid said he wouldn't pass it, and the House members said, you know, this doesn't go far enough anyway on really settling the spending costs that are going to send our country over the grease cliff, so to speak. So there needs to be spending controls, and I think a lot of people really don't believe that President Obama wants to avert going over the fiscal cliff. I personally think he wants to do exactly that.
Christine?
Boy, Kevin. So I absolutely disagree with you, Kevin, and I think that 57% of the American people who have given that approval rating to President Obama don't agree with you either. I think that when you look at where the deal was set and what President Obama offered, the Republicans keep repeating this mantra that they didn't offer anything. It's just not true. They were so close. The president offered $930 billion in cuts. The Republicans wanted $1.2 billion. So over $3 billion. They're going to throw us over the cliff. The president agreed to the chained CPI, which would have really limited the growth of the inflation rate for Social Security beneficiaries. And that would have hurt across the board. Democrats really didn't like that. Progressives didn't like that. We didn't like it to be affecting people who earned less than $250,000 in these talks. But the president gave on that. The president moved from saying that people who earned $250,000 would increase taxes. He went up to $400,000, probably would have gone up further. So the president kept moving and trying to come to the table and give something, and yet the Republicans refused it. And, you know, it seems to me, and it seems to many, I was watching Joe Scarborough, one of my favorite Republicans this morning, you know, it seems like they talked to one of the legislators from Kansas, and they're having a huge battle. I mean, the Republicans are fighting among themselves. It seems like there are some commentators call it tribal factions, that people are so angry within the party that Boehner just can't keep it together. And Boehner, as leader, is obligated to try to do something for the American people. He controls the Congress. So, you know, where are we going with this? It certainly isn't the president not putting out his hand, because he has. He's given a lot. He hurt people that, you know, that we don't want him to hurt. But he did that because he said everybody has to give. But on the other side, we don't see much movement. So I really think that this is a big problem. And I hope that the speaker can come back to the table and make a deal that he can forge so that they have a coalition of Democrats and some Republicans, because I'm certain some Republicans will vote for a deal to prevent our markets and our economy from crashing. I mean, Kevin, you know, you're the financial analyst. What's going to happen if we go over the cliff? Isn't that something that Republicans are concerned about?
You know, the bottom line here is that there is not a hill of beans of difference to the analysts, to the people who are going to grade America's debt, meaning our bonds, our treasuries. There is not a hill of beans of difference between a $17 trillion debt and about a $16.6 trillion debt. There's no difference at all, not really. The idea that we're going to limit Social Security increases as a solution to spending problems that our country faces, I don't think so. You know, I believe that Republicans are convinced that there is only one honest broker in this entire negotiating process, and that is the Republican side. Republicans believe that the President of the United States is not being an honest broker, and in any kind of a negotiation, you need two honest parties at the negotiating table all the time. Not on vacation, not posturing on other policy issues, not diverting problems away from foreign policy issues that have been facing our country for the last two months. But the reality is that the president has done very, very little other than put out that tiny counter proposal to possibly go up to $400,000, possibly more. The Republicans put forth a proposal that would have only raised taxes. It didn't even bring spending cuts to the fore. And the president and Senator Reid came out even before there was a vote in Washington, or would have been a vote, and said, no deal.
Let's take a call from Ned in Knowlton. Hello, Ned.
Hi. last night, the Plan B went down in flames. And what we need to do is let President Obama's proposal to avoid the fiscal cliff come up for a vote in the House. And, of course, Boehner doesn't want that to happen. On January 3rd, he comes up for a vote as to whether he's going to be the next speaker as well. And I think that there's a realistic chance that John Boehner is trying to delay this until after the vote January 3rd, and then something will happen because he wants to be the new speaker very much. Now, the Plan B, if it had passed, would allow a $50,000 average tax break to people earning over $1 million a year. And that is that's the part that's not talked about, even though their taxes would go up in one area, in other areas they would get a tax break. And secondly, as far as the 22 million Americans that would suffer from the loss of nutrition programs because their taxes would go up was not brought up by most of the media. And the last thing is there's 300,000 children who would lose their nutrition programs at school if Plan B had passed. So the Republicans have shown their true colors of what their priorities are.
All right, Ned, thank you. We don't need to, and we don't have time to address every single aspect of Ted's call, but Kevin first, is John Boehner playing politics because his speakership is in jeopardy?
Well, I think that speakers of the House always play politics, but I also think he's trying to get a deal. That's why he dropped all the demands in this most recent offer to reduce spending, to put cuts on the table. It was only a tax increase proposal. That's all it was, which would have saved some interest on the national debt as well, $45 billion only. But Plan B only raised taxes. He took the whole idea of spending cuts off the table, and the president said, you know what, there is no deal because the tax increases aren't big enough. They weren't the ones that he wanted. He wanted to push it all the way down to a lower threshold, which would hurt Wisconsin's small businesses. You know, in Wisconsin's 7th District, Christine, you and I know this, that about 99.2% of all small business owners earn under $1 million. I would like to see no tax increases on anybody. My preferred plan would have been for Boehner and the Republicans to actually come out with a tax cut proposal to make those tax cuts permanent. But really, isn't the president really trying to get rid of this fabled this real phrase that he has despised for years, and that's the Bush tax cuts, so he can come back in after he gets reinaugurated and put out an Obama tax cut after we've gone off the fiscal cliff?
All right, Christine, let me
we're going here.
Christine?
There's so much that Kevin said to respond to, but I think the most important thing to talk about is, you know, who's being honest here? You know, you said there needs to be someone at the table who's honest. Well, Speaker Boehner made a deal with the president, more or less, and then before even coming back to the table after, you know, coming to some concessions, goes to the press with his plan B without even talking to the president. So who's being honest in negotiations? I negotiate for a living, and I tell you, if one of the insurance companies that I negotiate against pulled something like that on me, the deal's off. So here's what I think. I think what Boehner was doing was trying to leverage. He put this tax deal up because he knew it wouldn't go anywhere. He wants time, just like Ned said, our caller. And what he wants time for is because he wants to get closer to the debt ceiling crisis so they have more leverage to try to hold the country hostage again. So I just think it was a stunt to buy time. It wasn't a true measure of negotiation. The president gave up a lot, just like Ned pointed out. There were programs near and dear that had to be protected, and the president had to move on things and try to find other ways to protect those nutrition programs and programs for people that are in need. But, you know, he put something on the table that the GOP wanted, and that was their proposal on the chain CPI. It saves $100 billion over 10 years. That's not nothing, Kevin. And they're only $3 billion apart. So who's playing games here? Who wants to push us over the cliff? The president has been trying, and the GOP has just refused to do anything to be responsible. You know, this is a constitutional government, and everybody has to give a little, and they're not giving anything. And this is all about compromise. The American people have said we won't compromise, and they're not doing it.
Well, we need to move on with other issues to review from the news this week. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Christine Bremer-Moogley and Kevin Hermaning. We will talk about the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, and the various proposals that have come from that as a way to try to prevent a similar tragedy. That's coming up. And we welcome your input on gun control and other issues. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Should there be a ban on assault weapons in this country? That's one of the questions we'll address. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up this afternoon, it's your views on the news after 4 o'clock. Jean Purcell in for Ben Marins, talking with a guest about the most important news stories of the week. We are doing the same thing. We are discussing the top state, national, and international news of the week and welcoming your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Kevin Hermaning and Christine Bremer-Moogley, getting both of their takes on the week's top stories. And let's turn to the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut. It was a week ago today that the gunman, Adam Lanza, broke into the Sandy Hook Elementary School last Friday, opened fire, and killed 20 children and 6 school teachers or staff at the school. He also killed his mother. He also killed himself. I don't know, Christine, just generally, what was your reaction to that shooting, and what do you think needs to happen now that we've had another horrific mass shooting?
Well, I think we all are just, you know, shocked and saddened, and it's just so horrific that you can barely bring yourself to watch the coverage of it because it's so personal. We all, you know, those of us that have raised children can remember when they were 6 years old, and you can just imagine how you would feel. I think that you know, it's so horrible, and you hate to say that on the back of something that horrible we come forward with legislation and politicize it, but it's not politicizing it to be wise to it and say, okay, now is the time to change. We have to look at where we are. I mean, you know, there are not good studies that show that the assault weapons ban really caused a drop in crime, because it was only in effect for 10 years and it was not long enough that they could really do significant studies on it. But we know from the statistics that gun violence in our country is killing our children. You know, 2,800 children and teens die annually from handguns and other guns. And the CDC says that every 2 months we lose more people than died in the 9/11 tragedy. So Are we just going to sit back in the face of this and say that, like President Obama said, the politics are too hard? I really give him a lot of credit for coming forward on this now and saying that he will use the power of his office to make certain that we look at this and we find ways to change. And I don't believe it's a single-faceted problem, and we have to look at all the problems. We have to look at the budget cuts to mental health care that have occurred over the last 10 years and try to help people. I mean, what we're learning is this mother of this young man was maybe trying to get him committed and didn't really have the tools to perhaps to do it. It's difficult to commit an adult in the United States to mental health care, and this young man went off. You know, so we need to assist families who have issues of mental health so that they know what to do, and there is places for them to get care. But it's clearly an issue of gun violence. You know, if we look at gun violence in our nation compared to other, you know, wealthy nations in the world, you know, we are at the very top, 20 times more deaths from guns than anywhere else. Yemen is number two, I think, is the statistic in terms of gun deaths, and they're 50% below us. So, you know, we need to look at an assault weapons ban. We need to look at the law and how it's drafted so there aren't loopholes. I have my son-in-law just loves guns, and he has guns with these huge clips, and he said to me after this was over, he said, I don't need to have a clip that has 30 rounds in it. That's stupid. He said they jam most of the time anyway, and all he does is target practice. What do people really need that for? I think that we really have to look at things like that and make a change in the law. It's time, and I think the American public is ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, it's time?
Well, I think there are a lot of issues, and as Christine indicated, certainly we all watched with despair at the news from last week in Connecticut. I actually go to a church. I go to church in Mosinee with the grandfather of a child who was in the school, thankfully was not killed, but in that very school. Mm. You know, it's interesting. Just yesterday in the state of Michigan, the governor vetoed a bill which would have allowed teachers to carry weapons in schools. Meanwhile, in Texas and Virginia, the governors there suggested that that would be a great idea and that they would be very willing to arm teachers if that is what their legislature allowed through the passage of a law. I think Christine is right about mental health laws. I think we need to be seriously considering, we need to rethink our public policy with regard to mental health and the problems for the people who in many cases have been medicated you know, it's interesting, we've seen our schools. Christine, you and I both served many years on a school board, and during our tenure on the school board, that's when medicating students became almost a necessity for so many people, and that was seen as a solution. But certainly, young people are incapable many times of taking their medications themselves. Young people over-medicate, they under-medicate, chemical imbalances do exist. I am a believer in that. By the same token, I think that we have another serious debate that's going to certainly take place. And Christine, you suggested earlier that the United States, unlike most Western nations, faces this kind of gun violence. Actually, Wales and England face a great deal of gun violence, and they have much more restrictive gun laws in those countries than we do in the United States. You know, it's the same language that everybody uses anytime we talk about gun control debate and rules and policies. The criminals are not going to be prevented from getting their guns, whether it's the shooter in the Sikh temple in Oak Creek, whether it is the man who went in and killed his wife or girlfriend, I believe, in the salon in Brookfield along with two others, or this tragedy out there. These people were not criminals before they did what they did. And so they were all troubled people, and I don't think that we're going to really get any kind of relief by banning assault weapons, by taking away handguns, by having more background checks. These things are have been a waste of public policy, of public money, and a waste of public policy debate time, as far as I'm concerned.
And Kevin, briefly, you want Governor Walker to support some sort of legislation to arm teachers?
I would not be opposed to that, but, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's hard enough for the governor to get teachers to agree to some of the other things that he has proposed. Certainly, you're going to see a lot of opposition among teachers if suddenly they wanted to be armed or the government required that they be armed. I don't think there's any such call for that. I think you might see in the Republican Assembly some kind of move in that direction, but... what would be wrong, quite frankly, with having a police officer, an armed police officer in a school building? What would be wrong with an armed teacher in a school building? Who are the first people that these teachers and the people in Sandy Hook Elementary School called? They called 911 so they could have armed police show up. Anytime there are people with firearms, you typically, for defensive purposes, you typically have less crime.
Yeah. So what about there are some who are suggesting that teachers should carry weapons, Christine?
Yeah, I think that I just have to say, I think that Governor Walker has given a statement about this, and he's talking about the panoply of issues we face. But, and I applaud him for that, especially his comments about looking at mental health. But the comment about giving teachers guns is way out there, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, this is the governor who has taken away so much from teachers, and now he thinks it's okay to give them guns. And, you know, on one hand, we have people calling them thugs, and on the other hand, now we want to give them guns. I think it's not what teachers want. I think what teachers want is protection and the options that are available, such as locking doors, that I think we're considering in the Wausau School District, so that doors are locked during the day for classrooms so the teacher can lock from the inside. That was something that didn't work at the school in Connecticut. You know, we have to make certain that lower windows are protected and that there's access limited for people getting into our buildings. But those are things that can be done. But giving teachers guns, I mean, where's the teacher going to have the gun in her pocket? You know, it's got to be, they'd have to be in a locker, they'd have to be in a purse, they'd have to be somewhere away from children. You can just imagine children find guns. We know that if there's a gun in the house and a kid wants to find it, they find it. I just think that's an outrageous idea. But, you know, I think the thought that we shouldn't do anything is really what's wrong here. I mean, just because we don't think it might really help to enforce stricter laws, we don't do that. I mean, look what Americans go through just to get on a plane. I was just on a plane in Denver, and everyone's disrobing to get on the plane and taking off all their shoes because there might be some kind of a weapon in your heel of your shoe, and you stand up behind in front of a big machine that takes a radiographic picture of you. And Americans will go through all of that just to prevent maybe somebody coming on that plane that we probably wouldn't even be able to prevent it anyway if they wanted to blow themselves up or set themselves on fire. But we do that anyway because we want to try to prevent something. So Americans routinely go through things that are difficult, regulations to make certain we're all safer. And I think the American people, by polling, even the NRA, all the members of the NRA, 69% of the gun owners support closing the gun show loophole. I mean, these are rules that need to be changed, and they're reasonable, and we need to do them for the safety of all of our people. Are we sure they're going to work? No. But we're not sure most of the things we do are going to work. And so we have to be reasonable about this and not say all regulations are gone and we believe in the Second Amendment. What do we routinely do in this country when we take away rights? You know, no one complains when we take away rights to a jury trial, for instance. Where are all the people complaining about that? And that right is often taken, you know, those rights are often limited. So here we are with the Second Amendment, and it stands above everything else when our children are being slaughtered. It's ridiculous.
Let's take a call from Rob in Radisson. Hi, Rob.
Yeah, the thing I noticed most about this incident was after the fact, when they were showing the aerial photographs on CNN and other radio television stations of all the officers and SWAT team members. It looked like there were hundreds of them all walking around with these Bushmaster rifles and clad in black and their Humvees and their trucks and everything. And all of the expense of that, all of the training, years of training, it didn't change a dime's worth of anything. The only thing that helped was the training that the teachers had to protect the children that they could. And I think that money would have been better well spent on Lexan glass for the lower part of the school. That guy couldn't have shot through to get in there. And if you start arming the teachers, are you going to start paying them the same wage as $90,000 to $125,000 that Border Patrol agents get and air marshals get? In Wisconsin, they start entry-level teachers at $23,000 a year.
All right. Well, very briefly, Kevin.
Well, I think you're talking about two different issues here. We're talking about people who are on the border of the United States with...
Well, yes, yes. Are you going to pay teachers more if you expect them to be armed and shoot intruders?
Well, Joy, I guess I think that if we're, you know, here's a very serious idea. We've got all of these returning veterans right now who are going to be looking for jobs. Maybe what we ought to be seriously considering is maybe having one fewer administrator, maybe having a few, maybe having a couple of classrooms that have more students in them, so you don't need quite as many teachers in the classrooms, or maybe you have one fewer guidance counselor. You spend a little bit less money on some of the other things that we're spending money on for public education right now, and isn't public safety really what we're trying to accomplish here? Christine, I do think you're wrong about one thing. You think that we all just roll over and we think that it's just great that we disrobe to go through the airport. A lot of us think that there are some constitutional issues with regard to search and seizure. And quite frankly, I am appalled at how willing so many people are to just having rolled over in the wake of 9/11 to what the TSA and the Department of Homeland Security did. Yes, it was a Republican administration in Washington at the time, but frankly, I'm appalled by it, and I know a lot of conservatives are appalled as well.
Let me take another call.
Well, they took away my Swiss Army knife in the Denver airport, and I wasn't happy about that. But look, I just have to respond, Joy, quick on this. I believe we should pay teachers more no matter what. So I don't agree that you should take away school psychologists because that's an issue of mental health. That's where we need psychologists. We need more of them. I think that what saved so many of the children in that school from something worse was the training and the professionalism of those teachers. And, you know, as coming from a family of teachers, I was so proud of those teachers. And, you know, when you know they did what was so difficult and had little children standing on toilets and keeping them quiet, you know, think of how hard that would be. And these teachers did it. So they're the heroes. They deserve more money. Yes, they need more training, but the training they had in Connecticut did work. And so we should just say the teachers deserve more money, more training. We should protect our schools, not with SWAT teams and guns for teachers, but with better, you know, systems that protect the school foundationally and built structure-wise. So I don't agree that we should cut anything out of the schools. We should give more money to teachers. We should give them more training and more support and more school psychologists.
Randy in Madison is with us now. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. Great show again. I agree with your prior caller. I think arming teachers is a huge mistake. I mean, just briefly, I mean, they talk about people having guns in the home, not making the home safer. Well, imagine hundreds of thousands of teachers with guns around millions of children. I mean, you're just adding fuel to a fire, as far as I'm concerned. That's a ludicrous idea. But having said that, I think cooler heads need to prevail here. I'm speaking as a former gun owner and hunter, avid hunter. I think we need to really start looking at some reasonable gun control issues, such as closing the gun show loophole, going through background checks, very simple things like that. You have to do more. You have to identify yourself harder and go through more testing to drive a car, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah.
I mean, cars, every time you sell a car, the DOT knows where that car is going.
All right. Thank you, Randy. So it's just reasonable, Kevin, to, you know, close the gun show loophole and have better background checks.
None of the things, not a single idea that has been talked about during this segment of our broadcast today, and frankly, any of the coverage for the past week, would have prevented this from occurring because this young man was on a mission. He was troubled, and they weren't even his weapons. They were his mother's weapons. If they weren't his mother's weapons, he would have gotten them from someplace else to do damage to these kids. The only possible thing that would have prevented this from occurring would have been if there was a police officer inside the school, or if the teachers had weapons or the principal had a weapon, they would have been able to take him out before he did the real damage that he ended up doing.
So,
I really disagree with that. Joy, I have to say mm-hmm. that I think this could have been, this boy had 30 bullet magazines. If that kind of ammunition was banned, his mother wouldn't have bought it. Moreover, if the system that they have in New York State to allow people to have gun permits had been in effect in Connecticut. Even though Connecticut has very strong gun laws, it didn't have it as strong as New York, where you, when you make an application in the state of New York, you have to list references. The state police of New York go out and check it out before you're allowed to have a gun. In this case, people might have indicated that people might have indicated that in this household, there was a boy who was obviously had some problems that people coming forward now are noting. You know, it takes 6 months in New York to get your permit. In Wisconsin, you get it in a week. You know, so when you talk about what could have been done, there could have been a ban on magazines of this size. He would have had to reload at least three times if the assault weapons ban had been in effect, and maybe somebody would have been able to get at him, would have given more time, and maybe more children would have survived. And if you're one of the parents of those 20 children that died, that's all the chance you want. You want that chance.
Let me jump in.
I think you're wrong, Kevin.
We did have the president start this task force, form this task force to look at ways to reduce gun violence. He has Vice President Joe Biden heading this effort, and he wants some proposals ready for next month. Kevin, what do you think should be among those proposals to try to prevent something like this from ever happening again?
I don't think there are any proposals on the gun side of things that would have prevented this. I don't think that any resolution to or any solution to that is gleaned with the phrase gun control would have prevented this, will prevent this in the future. Christine, there are other things that this young man would have done in his preparation if he didn't have the number of clips. He would have gone a different route. I think that's pretty clear with the massive preparation that he used for this. Again, they weren't his weapons. I think that we've got to look at the mental health issues and the possibility of expending some money, not at the federal level. I think this is a local or a state-level issue where local school districts are going to have to make those types of tough decisions about whether they're going to be putting security inside of their schools. And quite frankly, Christine, I do know that Wausau School District does not lock their doors because I walked right into the school for junior achievement every spring out at South Mountain School.
But they're changing that. They're looking at that, and they're changing that now, Kevin. That's something that
I understand.
This horrible event has caused change all across the country, including in our small towns in northern Wisconsin.
Well, in some small towns, like in Mosinee, we've been locking the doors in the schools for about, at least at the elementary level, for about 10 or 12 years.
All right, let's ask Christine, what sorts of proposals would you like to see Vice President Joe Biden present to the president?
Well, I think the difference in between what Kevin says and what I say is just the plain, honest difference between how conservatives see the role of government and how progressives and liberals see the role of government. I believe the government has a great role to play here to protect its citizens. So I'm hoping that when we look at the options that they're trying to, you know, study for this horrible problem, closing the gun show loophole is something that everyone agrees should be done. I believe even the gun, as I said, the NRA members even believe in that. I believe they should put strong restrictions on high-capacity ammunition clips. I believe that there has to be an increase in mental health resources. And I think that we have to do something about, if possible, with protecting First Amendment rights, we have to do something about this culture of violence. I believe that that's true. I think that there are too many horrible games, even, you know, some of these video games that kids are playing that have people shooting out of cars. I think those should be really restricted, and parents should be given more information so kids don't get at those. So I think there's a lot that can be done, and I think it's all going to be looked at, and I welcome that because I believe the government has a role in this, and I think government can serve us and make us a safer society.
We will move on to some other issues as we are reviewing the news of the week with Christine Bremer-Moogley, an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, and Kevin Hermaning, political activist, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party. And we will have our Week in Review quiz as well coming up here on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and it's time for the Week in Review quiz. What government agency released a video this week explaining that the world will not end today? As you have probably heard, the Mayan calendar supposedly predicted that today was the last day on Earth, but what government agency released a video explaining why the world will not end today? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, if you would like to guess, or if you know. And you can also email your answer to talk@wpr.org. We will give you, say, 5 minutes or so to guess the Week in Review quiz question, and we will reveal the answer and the winner at the end of the show. The winner, by the way, will receive one of the books that we have featured on the program recently. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Kevin Hermaning and Christine Bremer-Moogley today, talking about the top stories in the news this week. We've already talked about Fiscal Cliff. We've already talked about the Newtown shooting and some of the policy changes that could result from that. Let's talk about the State Department acknowledging that their mistakes were made and there was weak security that presumably led to the Benghazi attack. Kevin, I think it's your turn to start. Kevin, your reaction to that report.
Well, I think everybody knows and identifies that there was weak security in Benghazi at our diplomatic mission there. The tragedy of Ambassador Stevens' death and the other three Americans, including two Navy SEALs, has really, I think, been met mostly with stony silence from this White House, which has not only clammed up themselves, but also kind of put the talking points clamp on others who really could come forward and tell us exactly who knew what and when. Susan Rice certainly was the fall girl for this, so to speak, and we know how she's...
Kevin, fall girl, not a good term.
Well,
not good.
That's what she became. It doesn't matter. Yeah. The reality is that this president has really not stood up and said that he was unwilling to provide the security for his diplomats overseas. Secretary Clinton works for him, and now we're not even going to hear from the Secretary of State. I think I have a big problem with that. She has a responsibility to come forward. The idea that she was supposedly ill, and we didn't hear about it for a week, and she had a concussion, and we, the American people, didn't hear about it for a week. It just smells very fishy to me.
Do you think she's faking it? Does she have a case of the Benghazi flu, as some are suggesting, Kevin?
Well, as you know, there are many who have said that they're not accusing her of faking it, but I do.
Oh, Christine.
Kevin, you know, as someone who deals with people that have concussions very often, I think that the right decision was made. You do not think clearly when you have a concussion, and she obviously suffered a fall due to this horrible flu she had. So, you know, give her the benefit of the doubt. This is a woman who's absolutely dedicated her life to this country, and I think it's outrageous that you would accuse her of being duplicitous in that regard. And they have put forward the top people from the State Department who have, you know, come forward. They've released all the documents. They embraced the report of the Independent Commission and are making changes. I mean, I think their mistakes were made, and it's a very difficult situation. And I believe that Senator Clinton was very close to Ambassador Stevens and this personally, and I think this is very, very difficult for her as well. You know, one of the things that Senator Kerry said yesterday is he talked about the fact that, you know, the State Department is requesting more money for increased security. And I hope that the Congress will give that money so that there can be increased security in these very dangerous posts. Kevin, you of all people know how dangerous that is. And they do need more money there, and they do need better security. And the State Department does need to change. And I hope that those changes are put into place. I don't think anyone is trying to cover anything up. All the documents are coming forward. You know, if we spend $650 billion on the military, and we put in, you know, very, very small money on our defense of these State Department posts, that's a mistake. And so I hope that if we're putting our our State Department diplomats out there in the world where it's dangerous, we are protecting them, and that
wasn't even the issue. This isn't even the issue, though. The issue isn't whether or not there was security on site or not. The issue is, what did our president fail to do as the attack was occurring? That's really the issue here. What did President?
Well, that's your issue, but I think the bigger issue is the security, and that we know our ambassador was going to a place where he was trying to implement a policy to make things better for the people there, and I don't think we should take his death as a political volleyball and try to make it into an issue against our president. American people do not agree with that. Obviously, this was brought forward before the election, and President Obama was reelected. So I think you shouldn't do that with this issue. I think we should look at what we can learn from it. That's what the State Department is doing. That's what the president is doing. Hillary Clinton will be before this group next month when she's recovered, and we will hear from her, and I think we should all wait to hear from her as to what happened, in her opinion, and then what they're going to do about it to fix it.
Let me move on to the issue of President Obama possibly picking Republican Chuck Hagel to run the Pentagon, to be the next Secretary of Defense. And apparently a lot of, or some, former Senate colleagues are raising concerns over this. They question some of his positions regarding Iraq, Israel, and the Middle East. Do you, Kevin, have any issue with Chuck Hagel as the next Secretary of Defense?
You know, as a conservative, I do. As a former Marine, I do. As a Department of Defense supporter and a strong advocate of the rights of Israel to exist, I do. Senator Hagel tried dipping his toe in the presidential primary waters, and everybody saw how far that went. This is an effort. It's not much different than Charlie Crist down in Florida, the governor changing parties now twice from being a Republican to then an independent and now to a Democrat to try to make good with the people who are in power for the positions that he wants. I think Chuck Hagel is going to be selected. I think he's going to win because the Senate is a collegial group normally. I believe there's only been one person who was seeking a role as Secretary of Defense who's ever been denied that position, the selection by the President of the United States, and that was when John Tower was trying to become the Secretary of Defense when nominated by President George H.W. Bush. And the Senate decided they were truly going to play politics in that. And I would be surprised if he is denied that opportunity, but I don't think he's the best choice.
I have to jump in because we have just a little bit of time left. Christine, very briefly, your reaction to Chuck Hagel and the concerns over him?
I think there's bipartisan support to not have him as Secretary of Defense. I think that he's made some comments that are very offensive to the gay and lesbian community, and he was a supporter of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and I think there's a lot of people on the left that really don't support him, and I think the people on Kevin's side of things know that he opposed sanctions. He supported negotiating with Hamas. He supports lifting restrictions on travel to Cuba and loosening our Cuban restrictions and our relationships with Cuba. And so the right doesn't like him. The left has questions. I think there could be someone better.
Thanks very much. Congratulations to Lewis in Lake Geneva, our weekend review quiz winner. He correctly guessed that NASA released a video entitled Why the World Didn't End Yesterday. The video was a response to ongoing rumors that a Mayan calendar predicted that the world would end today. Here's a quick clip.
If you're watching this video, it means one thing. The world didn't end yesterday. According to media reports of an ancient Maya prophecy, the world was supposed to be destroyed on December 21st, 2012. But look around you. The whole thing was a misconception from the very beginning.
The video explains that while one cycle of the Mayan calendar would come to an end, a new one would start, just like we would put up a new calendar on January the 1st. So the world will not end. Kevin, Christine, I hope you have a good weekend after the end of the world.
Merry Christmas, Joy, and thanks for all you do for bringing your great show to all of us in Wisconsin.
Well, thank you very much to Christine Bremer-Moogley and to Kevin Hermaning. Have a great weekend. We will be here on Monday on Christmas Eve. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.